Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the podcast that is officially accurately named for once and for all. We've noted in the past that, you know, it seems like it's going to be the year that we can say maybe next year yet again, and in fact, we can. One thing I will note, you can tell the last time I led, I drafted a beautiful, smooth intro. This time, I've made this crap up off the top of my head. So, without
still better than last week's intro where I don't think I got the name of the podcast out correctly.
So. Right. It's like, welcome to Bills and Beers. Or, wait, no, that's the other guys.
Damn it.
This is a Buffalo room, but yeah, sorry.
Oops. Welcome to Sal's Putt. No, that's not right either. But this is Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year. I am Paul.
I am Scott.
I am Frank.
We are going to have a very healthy mix today, I would say. We are going to have the micro view, if you will, of the latest debacle. Like lambs to the slaughter, the Bills take the field against the Redskins, so we'll go into that. And we will also, of course, take a more macro view, if you will, talk about things like the front office discord, the defensive he said back and forth, and general ineptitude, which could be, in fact, the title for the Bills season when NFL Films actually recaps it. So, you know, that's going to be something to look forward to as well. But without
It'll
further...
sound better with the NFL Films music in the background.
As everything does, and I think Deadspin had an interesting... I just saw the article title today.
An unusually warm day in Washington, D.C.
By the way, what did the temperature get to? It was like a day, wasn't it?
It was in the high 50s or 60s. Yeah. I don't know about 70s. Maybe.
And kudos to you both, gentlemen. I made fun of you last weekend for not taking advantage of the once every 8 years opportunity to go to the game. And then I thought, no, that was the right choice. There's no doubt.
We sniffed that from a mile away. Like it smelled bad the whole way.
Yeah, I was getting close. There were some people at work who were going to the game who are evidently Bills fans. They were showing up wearing their Bills jerseys on Friday, and I was like, who knew? And they were going, and I was seriously considering it. But yeah, I'm glad.
We should converse socially more often.
No, I'm leaving this office, so I don't need to talk to them ever again. But,
which is, we will recap this the hilarious story quickly on this, and I won't go into details. We were all at the previous Bills Washington game back in 2007. Frank and Scott were with some people separately. I was also sitting separately from them. It's about 89,000 to 90,000 seat stadium. We couldn't get in touch during the game and see each other during the game because the cell phone signals weren't that good. So how did we end up meeting each other? We got lost going in the exact same wrong direction. And I turned around, having realized I was in the wrong direction, and caught Frank and Scott and their crew coming also in the wrong direction. And I believe we ended up at Pizzeria Uno and then at the Largo Metro.
That's true.
So we walked several miles that day. We got some good exercise. So
we did.
Definitely.
All right. Should we just dive in, guys, and get this one over with? That's kind of what the Bills' attitude is going to be the last couple of weeks, I'm sure. So let's talk about Bills Washington, and I'm going to use my my unchallengeable power right now and say, Frank, why don't you get us started on this crap show?
Okay. So this is my Bills Washington recap, and just bear with me for a moment. On the drive over to Scott's house, because we did watch the game together, we got together as families and brought our babies together and watched the game, and I was listening to not the Bills pregame and not the Washington pregame, but to Radiolab on NPR, and they were talking to somebody who, if you guys know, the extinction of the dinosaurs and the theory that, like, a meteor, like, hit the Earth and a bunch of dust went up and the whole Earth cooled and they froze to death basically over tens of thousands of years. And what this scientist on the radio was saying was that's not true at all. His theory and his science says that when the meteor hit the Earth, all the particulate flew up into the sky was dirt that instantly turned to glass, essentially. And the problem is, it started to go out towards space, and as it fell back down, as gravity took over, all the little bits of glass start falling to the Earth. And you're like, oh, are they all going to die from glass? No. What happens is, the glass begins to melt in the sky. And all the glass that melts in the sky adds a little bit of temperature to the sky. And essentially, within 3 hours, of the Earth being hit by the meteor, the entire Earth is at about 450 degrees. It's like a 750. It's like a pizza oven. Okay,
so it's like a nice quiche you can put in there. Yeah.
The entire Earth is a pizza oven, and all the blood boils in all of the dinosaurs at the same time. They all die at the same time, and that's my Buffalo Washington recap. Was essentially the entire season went up like the sky caught fire. It was a single disgusting, tragic moment summed up, little did I know, in a preview of the game on the drive over to Scott's house. I do not make that up. It was literally everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and not only did it all go wrong, it was beyond ugly and really, like, not safe for work to be watching. The football team is a disgrace. And that was perhaps amongst a many number of poor efforts over the last 16 years of not making the playoffs. That is about as bad an effort as I have ever seen in my football watching life by Buffalo. Like that arguably is as bad as any losses I've ever seen. So, Scott.
Well, there's not a lot of room for me to go here. Oh wait, yes, no, I can go through.
I guess we can talk about the game now, but I just.
No. I think that's fair because honestly, like and just for people, again, me and Frank live in the greater Washington, D.C. area, so we have to deal with the Redskins on a fairly regular basis. We're exposed to their shenanigans. The Redskins are, in fact, a terrible team, despite the fact that they are 7-7.
Right. Mind you, I did want to bring up this point in the intro. The Bills are facing, by easily, there's no debate here, the NFC's worst division, and are on the verge of going winless against it after facing the juggernaut NFC North with Green Bay and a great Detroit team last year and sweeping them. So, all right, I'm off my rant.
I mean, it's the perfect point. I mean, not only is it the NFC East, where no team is above 500, and someone will almost certainly win the division. At best, Washington can win it at 9-7, but more likely someone's going to win it at 8-8.
Maybe 7-9.
Maybe 7-9.
That could happen.
The Bills are 0-3 against this division. Wait, no, we are? No, we beat the Eagles.
Yeah, no, we're 0-3.
We've lost. Okay, so we lost the Eagles.
We're going for the goose egg next week against Dallas.
Against Dallas. And.
And spoiler, I'm not sure they can beat Dallas.
And we played the AFC South, which is another division where a team that's entirely possibly not more than 500 is going to win that division. We have done slightly better against that division because we beat the Colts early on in the season in a game the Colts apparently slept in for. We then lost to the Jaguars. We also beat the Texans, the Titans, one of the worst teams in the league. So we are basically 2-5 against the two worst divisions in football. So that's when Frank says, when you lose by 10, and it very seriously could have been a lot worse, given that we kind of made some plays to kind of get back into it a little bit towards the second half, very could-have-ly, you know, that's one of the reasons why we kind of are both equally horrified as to what was going on Sunday. And it was like not even... This wasn't, again, we've seen lots of these kind of games. This was kind of had the feel of a Patriots game, where it's like, oh, well, this team's just clearly superior to us.
That's the most depressing thing that's ever been said.
It was like, yeah, they're
the
on
most
the
depressing thing that has ever been said, that the Washington game felt like a New England game. Just fucking give me rat poison now. Just do it.
I wish it wasn't true, but I mean, it's like Kirk Cousins.
I know.
22 of 28, 319, 4 touchdowns, a 153.7 QB rating. That's literally 0.1 off of the perfect rating. 99.0 QBR.
Someone called in today to say that Kirk Cousins should be in the MVP discussion, which is insane.
Right.
And so to the level of which...
To the insane asylum that you were driving by, or...
It was just...
It was on the radio. Oh, okay.
It was on the radio. I do think... Game. So I know that they weren't done, but it's been pretty clear that like this is a team that's disappointed already going into the last couple of weeks.
I think they should have been. Yeah, we assessed 3 weeks ago after the Chiefs game. We all agreed like that. That's it. You know, They might win some games. Let's see if they can finish strong. But they really didn't have anything resembling a chance after the Chiefs game. This just was the nail in the coffin.
And I think for the players, the Eagles game was really the nail in the coffin. That if they had come into that game 7-6, or if this game against Washington had been in Week 5, right? I think it's a completely different game. I don't know that. Look, kudos to the NFC East. They're terrible, but they play a lot of teams tough, right? And they certainly have beaten Buffalo, so there's not a lot of room for me to talk about how terrible they are.
Right, and the Eagles beat the Patriots in New England, so it's not like it's a total crap
show. But if this is a Week 5 game, I'm just saying I think Buffalo is probably thinking, okay, we're better than this team. We can play with them. We should beat them. There are things to play for, you know? And I think this week was literally just – you know, LeSean McCoy was at a party Sunday night, and everybody was, I think, they looked checked out. I hate to put a psychological, I am the last person who likes to put a psychological bent on what I see from afar, but if there was ever a team that looked checked out for the first half, it was the Buffalo Bills this week. They were just completely, just like, not even there.
Right, and we're just talking about the offense, mind you, they checked out the first half, and then they're like, oh, okay, I guess at the end of the first half, we'll come up with a big drive, and then we'll play well in the second half. The defense, unless someone disagrees with me, they never really showed up, correct, until the fourth quarter when they were already down.
I can't really think of any good stops that they had, no.
Well, I mean, I would say that I don't know if all 11 guys did. I mean, clearly Jerry Hughes was yelling at people on the sideline.
Yes, right.
So
that's fair.
He took it upon himself to attempt to get someone to do something. The secondary clearly just was playing in a different stadium. I don't know if they got the message we were playing in D.C. this week, but it was clearly not anything that they were doing. And then, again, I think Bradham was back for this game, but it was kind of hard to tell because there was plenty of – I mean, they didn't have a ton of success running the ball, Washington. They only had about if you look at it, if you take out the last, like, Alfred Morris run where he got 47 yards, which you can't really take out because they were trying to kill the clock and they – ran the ball for 47 yards.
Yeah.
And ended the game, essentially. But even if you took that out, you know, and you'd have, like, they'd had, like, 67 yards rushing. So, you know, that's okay. But, again, when you have a perfect quarterback rating on the other side, it doesn't matter how well you run the ball because you're going to lose. And they just completely checked out in the first half. The secondary wasn't there. The pass rush wasn't there. No, I agree. Like, it was very disappointing to see them really not even try, other than really like three or four offensive skill position players and Jerry Hughes. That was about it.
Colton Schmidt had his first terrible punt of the year. Like,
and it wasn't even his fault. That was the long snapper's fault. So I put that on Dorin Bose or whoever the long snapper is.
The four downs at the goal line, like Scott.
Although, did you say? Wait, I do have to check Scott because he said the long snapper. John Dornbos, who I believe, if we go in our way back machine, was in fact the Bills' long snapper up until, what, about 2003, I think?
I have no idea. You would know better than us.
2004, excuse me. So, been Garrison Sanborn for...
Oh, early yes, of
it
course.
Is Sanborn. I would have guessed Sanborn. That's okay.
Well, he played terrible on Sunday.
He did.
NFL.com is showing the Bills' miscues, including the fourth down fade that, an old Chinese woman in China who's never seen the NFL probably could have guessed what the play was. Like,
well, no, I don't think that's fair, because if an old Chinese woman in China had never seen an NFL team play, they'd say, like, well, that's the worst possible play to run on fourth down. They would never run that play, unless she knew something about the Bills.
They're completely pedestrian in ridiculous situations like that. Like, that's your second down play, right?
Yeah, like, that's what I said on Twitter. Like, that's a beautiful play call on second and goal from the one.
Right.
It's unbelievable. Like, literally, like, I was talking to Frank on Sunday, and I was like, after the third run into the line that got nothing, I was like, oh, here comes the fade. Fourth down fade to Watkins. And I was like,
and as Paul and everybody else noted, the third down was on the fucking line. It was on, like, all you had to do was fall forward.
If it were a video game, it would have been a touchdown at the snap, but sadly it's not. But Wood did have the ball in the end zone, because you are allowed that latitude as an offensive center to, you know, move the ball up about whatever it is. It's not a full half yard, but about a third of a yard or a quarter yard. And so he actually, when he snapped the ball, it was touching the end zone. Like, all you have to do is snap it to Tyrod and lean forward. And they lost yards.
28-17, they gave up third and 16 again. It's just like the same nonsense that we've seen all year. They get these third and longs, they can't finish it. The last touchdown that Washington threw, Lierce McKelvin had his head down until he was three quarters of the way into the end zone, and then finally managed to look up to see the ball coming into Pierre Garçon, and then inexplicably puts his head back down. like knows the ball is coming. So at first he's definitely thinking, like, I don't know, like the end zone must be 7 yards farther down the road than he thinks it is, even though he's already in it. And then I don't understand how he looks up and doesn't finish turning around. Like, what is he doing? I don't get it. The touchdown to Macklin, where he kind of pushed off a little, but all of a sudden there were two Bills there. Macklin's completely stopped to catch the ball. He had to stop to catch an underthrown ball and just, like, runs by everyone.
Very, very disappointing. It was another game where, you know, if you looked at the talent levels of these two teams, it would be hard-pressed to say that Washington was more talented. And even in a road game, you expected
the Bills were a three-point favorite. Let's not lose sight of that.
Yeah, it's really...
Washington had the skin tangibles, as Larry Michael likes to say.
It's very, very disappointing. I don't know. Paul, do we have anything else to say? I don't know what it was.
I mean, I can't think of much more to say about this game. Normally, it's just when I go through the...
you know what? Go ahead. I was going to say we could talk about Tyrod Taylor and whether he had a good football game or not.
Yeah, I think, that's actually a good topic. And I will say from my end, I was generally pleased with Tyrod. He had some not-so-great moments. He did not have a good game as Kirk Cousins. I don't think that's debatable. But again, we'll do the numbers. Look, only, 59.3%, 235, two touchdowns, no picks. And you can obviously know all those yards were in garbage time. Not all of them were. You know, that third quarter, the Bills were down 28-17 after he'd really gotten them back in the game. And the defense had had Washington down to 3rd-16, where a score makes it, you know, a much closer game if they can force upon the Bills and keep the momentum going. So I thought he did well. I don't think it was a game where – let's put it this way. I think for Tyrod, this was a middling game. But for any previous Bills quarterback, this – I shouldn't say Ed, obviously, but any Bills quarterback of recent memory, this would have been considered a quote-unquote good game. So yeah. I was fine with Tyrod. I think he did well.
Did you mention the 79 yards rushing he had as well,
yeah.
Paul?
Yeah. That's, and I have to leave something
part of
his
game now. Yeah, I mean it's a huge part of his game now, and I think he's a little more comfortable using it more. I agree, it was kind of a middling game for him. It's still frustrating to see him miss throws because of just not getting all of the fundamentals perfect. You know, getting his feet set. He is a capable thrower when he gets outside the pocket, but I feel like it's usually when he's able to get his feet set and then be able to get the ball down the field to someone like Sammy or somebody. It seems as though I saw him at least two or three times on Sunday running and trying to basically throw it while he was literally running, and he was not as accurate as you'd like.
That miss to Sammy was hurt. That hurt right there. But again, yeah, when he's on the move, he doesn't seem to throw as well nearly.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's, again, it's kind of fair. No one in the NFL is really great at throwing the ball on the move, other than maybe the truly, like, great quarterbacks in the league who are Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, you know, Tom Brady to a lesser extent. He's never been great on the move. But, you know, I think Tyrod had a good game. Obviously, whenever you don't win, you know, it's easy to point the finger at the quarterback. I think there were some throws he'd like to have back, but you really can't put this game on him. I mean... He played
okay.
Well enough to win, I would say.
But
Frank?
I think that there's something to that. But I also was listening to the radio, heaven help me, and there was some discussion about how that, you know, he's not a 300-yard passer, or he hasn't been, and that there seems to be like a limited number of plays that they have for him, and there's a certain extent to which maybe, just maybe, that because he's sort of working on this limited scale, that he's not really capable of, not that he's not capable, the game plan that they designed for him limits his ability to, in fact, go out and win a football game. And the question then becomes, like, is there a Tyrod Taylor in there that can in fact step up and make the 300-yard game in a third or fourth touchdown. You know, like, he did take off with his legs a few times. It was good. But, like, there's plenty of drives that stalled, too. And it's kind of hard to say, okay, he didn't make any terrible mistakes. He threw a couple of deep balls. He's better than Captain Checkdown. But at the same token, like, these drives aren't getting finished. And we can say, and we, at the beginning of this year, were very down at times on the offensive game plan of let's build up around the quarterback and hope that we have a good quarterback, because it was sort of like you need a good quarterback to win. And here's some evidence that, like, he's got a couple of skilled players, and he doesn't have much of an offensive line, but he doesn't have a completely zero offensive line. So I think that's a question for going into next year. It might be as simple as you need somebody better than Chris Hogan, because Chris Hogan dropped a fucking – let's talk about how terrible his drop was. Like, yes. You know, Tyrod Taylor gave him basically a touchdown, or at least a catch down near the 5-yard line, and he dropped it. And so that's basically almost 300 yards right there, you know, if he completes that pass.
If you take his yards from scrimmage, it would be over 300 yards. If you add the rushing, not be – he's accounted for more than 300 yards. I think that's kind of an artificial number.
I think that's just a line I picked, because he hasn't crossed 300 passing.
No, so. I agree, and it's been something I think that's happened to Bills quarterbacks in the past too, is that we haven't had a guy get over 300 in a while. But at the same time, I feel like Tyrod is good enough. As Sammy said, you know, Tyrod's a pro. Tyrod's doing his job. You know, whatever he said, I'm not worried about Tyrod. There's a lot more people on this team who I'm worried about.
Sure.
Right. And I think one thing, and this will be more of an off-season discussion too, is what happens to Tyrod when he doesn't have a great number two option. Let's be honest. Robert Woods, Chris Hogan, guys have their moments, but, you know, they're not stars. And when Charles Clay is out of the lineup, and your tight ends are Chris Gregg and Nick O'Leary, he just doesn't have the talent. I always like to use, in my head, I've used Fitzpatrick as the example. All of a sudden, you throw in Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, and he's no longer, you know, going down the stretch, everything's an interception with him at the end of the game, because he has the talent around him now. So how different would, and this could be a fun discussion for the offseason too, how different is this Bills team if Percy Harvin stays healthy, based on how well the offense performed with him in there? So, you know, this is the annual rite of passage for us. These are the what ifs that we all do when it's officially the end of the season. I kind of had in our recap to talk about the defense regression this year. I think we'll get into that a little bit when we talk about the front office discord and the offense, whether it has signs of life or not. We can go into that too, but I really think, if I talk any more about this game, I might kill a man. That's my concern. But if anyone has any final thoughts, please let me know on this one.
No, I'm ready for 3 stars.
Yeah, I say we go 3 stars. I do want to, by the way, wish a happy birthday to Orlando, who I tweet with during the game, who had the benefit of having the game fall on his birthday and not watching. And then he decided he was going to watch it on Game Pass because he loves the pain. And then he said, the viewing of the Bills-Redskins game has reached its conclusion. I have done myself a great disservice, I must say. So, with that in mind, let's stick to 3 stars in this game, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, this one's kind of an easy one. I mean, I'll give Sammy the bone of getting his 5 catches, 111 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He gets honorable mention. Because that's a pretty good day, especially given how he was, again, most of the offense. I mean, LeSean, obviously coming out, obviously that, you know, you can't really hold it against McCoy. But I think the Redskins were clearly kind of geared up to stop him. But Watkins had a very nice day. But ultimately, there are 3 stars of this game, and none of them are on the Bills. Let's start with DeSean Jackson, 6 catches.
Not even Tyrod. Okay.
I can't do it anymore. Like, I've been trying to, help him along. Maybe gave him one he didn't deserve a little bit, maybe a little week ago. But
friends become enemies, enemies become friends. All right.
Have you heard about this guy? your secondhand news story.
Yes.
Deshaun, 6 catches, 150 yards, 1 touchdown. One of the many receivers who the Bills were not able to cover today. Another of the many receivers who the Bills were not able to cover, Jordan Reed, 7 catches for 80 yards and 2 touchdowns on Sunday, catching all of his targets. Something that we're going to have to work on in the offseason is covering tight ends and specifically getting better at defending passes. As we've been pointing out the whole season, our cornerbacks have been fairly fantastic when Gilmore is in there. But yet teams are still able to move the ball on us through the air, and I think it's a lot because, especially with Bradham out, but also with him in there, we have had trouble covering tight ends and covering slot receivers, and that's on the safeties and the linebackers, and they're not getting it done. And, yeah, that's 7 receptions, 84 yards, 2 touchdowns for Jordan Reed, who is a good tight end, but by no means one of the best tight ends in the league, which he looked like on Sunday. And then, obviously, for star Kirk Cousins, 6 incompletions, 4 touchdowns, a 5th touchdown rushing, which is, again, you want to talk about giving up. Kirk Cousins running the ball in from 14 yards out
or whatever,
down, to go up 14-0 or 21-0 in the first half. That's giving up on that. And then, the 99.0 QBR. I think they were saying the best quarterback rating that's been posted against the Bills ever, maybe? Or maybe in the last 10 years? One of them. Definitely.
I'd be surprised if Brady hadn't done that.
Well, they throw the ball so much, though, that he ends up getting more incompletions.
He ends up missing. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But, we'll see if we can Google that in time for the end of the show. But those are your 3 stars for tonight.
And we should say, before we move away, a little piece of good news inserted in what's going to be a largely Fury and Big Ray podcast. Congratulations to the Buffalo Bills Pro Bowler, Mr. Do you guys care to take a guess on who it is?
I saw it, so I don't want to say.
Oh, yeah, I heard they were coming out tonight, and I closed the window. So I will guess that it's tough. I mean, Incognito's had a good season. Watkins gets a lot of publicity, but he hasn't had that great numbers.
Darius
is the safe choice, so I'll go Darius.
Let me give you it. Oh, okay. All right, I'll give you a hint.
What was the guess?
Darius.
Darius.
Indeed Marcel Darius LeSean McCoy.
Yeah. Oh. LeSean
McCoy.
My hint was going to be not to worry about how good a person's season was and focus solely on who probably the biggest star on the team is.
Name recognition, okay.
Yeah, who has a bunch of fans in Philadelphia that are still voting for him.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Been great.
Oh, yeah, he's for, 895 yards in, 10 games? And he's left a couple of those early.
Yeah, and been dinged for a couple. Yeah, no, I mean, he deserves, again, they're doing it in the unconference look, so I'd have to think about who else would be in front of him in the running back line. You know, obviously, Adrian Peterson.
I would have thought Devontae Freeman. I would have thought with him missing 4 games, though, that would have been a problem. But he might have got a little of the Derek Jeter there. He might have got a little of the. I know LeSean. He's been running well.
And did Peyton make it in, by the way? Do we know?
I have not looked at all the selections. I just had the Twitter feed open when this news broke about 15 minutes ago.
I'll pull up the Pro Bowl and I'll let you know. Rodgers, Brady's among the offensive stars selected to the Pro Bowl team. Quarterbacks are Tom Brady, Cam Newton, Carson Palmer, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, and Russell Wilson. Peyton Manning was not.
Wow.
And you know, Roethlisberger, I will say I don't like that pick, not because he is not a Hall of Fame quarterback who's done well when he's played this year, but he has missed huge chunks of the season, says Hypocrite Paul, noting he's okay with LeSean McCoy being selected to the...
Running backs, Devonta Freeman, Todd Gurley, Doug Martin, LeSean McCoy, Adrian Peterson, and Jonathan Stewart. Wide receivers, Odell Beckham Jr., Antonio Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, and Brandon Marshall. And then that's all I'm going to read.
That's a little surprising. I mean,
defense has not come out yet, so that's just the offense. So
okay. Yeah, but who's going to make it from this defense? I mean, Gilmore's the only one who's been good, and he's hurt, so...
Right.
Well, yeah. Darby, you could see.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Anyway, we'll see.
Yeah. But, yes, congrats to LeSean. Just to get healthy quickly. Or not too quickly. Don't bother coming back this year, but just be ready for opening day next year. How about that?
So I just want to complain really quickly. Ever since we've switched to this like changing leads format. I feel like I, you know, like who's in charge of the podcast. I just feel like I don't know what I'm doing anymore, and it's just not fair because I'm a really quality be in charge of the podcast guy, and now they want me to do this shit where I'm like not being in charge of the podcast, and I'm like listening to Paul and Scott, and I think that's just like, you know, would I take a pay cut to do this? I don't know. Like, is this podcast any good? Who knows? But like, I just wanted to say that.
Given the turnout of this podcast, it seems unfair to have you take a back seat, but.
I think so. Like, for a really good podcast, I would take a back seat and a pay cut, but, like, I don't know if that's the case here.
And so. What's funny is Scott and I have already really adopted your habits largely. I came into the first few times I did an hour-long lunch at work, detailed notes going through the things I wanted to say, going through the points I wanted to bring up that you wouldn't find elsewhere, now regress to the point where I'm like, okay, I guess I'll just talk more. And I'll lay out a random agenda. So that was so it took me in about five times leading to get where you were over the course of about 4 years. So I can't speak for Scott, of course, but that's largely been my approach. So
sorry, I'm having an autoplay in my head right now.
From the video.
Yeah. So all right, we'll move ahead. Is Frank immediately tried to hijack me there? Did you hear that? Everyone hear that? That interjection. He wants to take
this
over.
I'm just rushing the passer. I don't care what the play call is. I'm rushing the passer.
It is mutiny. And speaking of mutiny, let's talk about some Discord not on this podcast, but in the front office of the Buffalo Bills. We are going to ask this question. We're going to toss it about, and then we'll talk about. Actually, you know what? Yeah, let's do the front office Discord, and then talk about the comments this week, because I think they relate. You know, we'll kind of combine these topics. Would you rather have, at the beginning of next year, Rex Ryan or Doug Whaley? And let's make sure to try and put in comments from players this week to support your answer. So this is going to be kind of an essay question.
Essay question. Stemming, of course, from the Jason Lockenfora article on Sunday morning, which was poorly timed.
Let's start with Jason Lockenfora, who is a muckraker
next year.
No, Jason Lockenfora is a muckraker. He sucks, okay? He's from the Baltimore, D.C. area. His last big scoop was about how Bill Polian was coming back to the Bills. So good on him for that scoop with the Bills. And I believe Sal Capaccio, who today was very much saying, like, he has not heard anything and that there is a very clear indication that both of these gentlemen will be on the team next year or in the front office next year. So with that caveat that Jason Lockenfora sucks, why don't you go first, Scott?
Okay. Well, I mean...
or tell to Paul. I'm like taking...
Hey, screw you, Frank. Why don't you go first, Scott? That's my answer to that.
Okay. That's fair.
This one is obviously very complicated for me because My dislike of Doug Whaley is well known. I don't think he's a particularly great GM. I think he's made some decent picks, but I don't think he's been great at assembling a team that has a kind of unified theory of winning. I mean, I think they've put in some decent pieces together on defense, obviously, much of which he kind of inherited. But he's also kind of built this team around a run game and not built an offensive line accordingly. I think... I would be concerned about starting over to a certain extent with a new coach, but at the same time, I feel like if I had to pick one of these guys, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Whaley, I think this team, if we had, and the thing that's pissing me off on this whole line, just a brief tangent, is Mike Rodak keeps writing articles like, oh, the Bills were better at this time last season. Weren't the Bills a better team last? If only they didn't, and it's like, it's like he's forgot what happened last year. Doug Marrone left. We didn't fire him. He left. We can't go back in time and make Doug Marrone stay or give him some insane Godfather deal where he gets to give all of his assistants lifetime contracts. That's completely insane, and no one would have done that anywhere in the league. So let's, like, not make this out like, oh, this is a great, you know, this was some...
Absolutely.
We had some perfect scheme that was going to get us the playoffs this year, and then it all fell apart because someone did something wrong. The only thing that happened was Marrone left, Schwartz left, which was clearly the biggest mistake, and then Doug Whaley hired Rex Ryan, which gets us back to the original question. And honestly, this is a tough one for me. I would have to say you kind of got to get rid of Ryan. I know it's a little weird for me. I don't think Whaley's good, but I feel like this team's close enough where I really think – any idiot could give Tyrod a big contract if he plays well next year and do a decent job putting some pieces around him. Again, I think the talent level is very, very good, regardless of Whaley's kind of idiocy on the offensive line. And I feel like Ryan's kind of lack of attention to detail and bad kind of player substitutions, and we'll get into that later, but not using his players to the best abilities, I just don't think he's a good fit. I'm not sure if he's, he did some good things with the Jets, but he also had a lot of losing seasons with the Jets, and there's a reason he got fired or kind of mutually parted ways, and I'm seeing all of those reasons now, and it's hard for me to say that if I was going to have one of them, I would have Ryan over Whaley. I mean, I could make the argument, definitely, but I feel like we're just close enough that Ryan could be the difference.
All right, what do you think, Frank?
Good. I liked Scott's comments a lot, and I definitely like how he took a swipe at Mike Rodak. Because that's my thing. I like taking swipes at media people who deserve it. And you're right. It's a big deal that Malarkey. What's his stupid name?
Marone and Schwartz.
Marone left, right? And I think that feeds into some of what's happening with the team this year, and this is going to get to my answer. That, Doug Whaley had built a lot of this team for Marone, and now in midstream, right, like really after like a year or two, like all of a sudden has to like start building the Rex Ryan team. So I think of some of what you're seeing this year is that transition that wasn't really planned for, right? Like we were planning to go one direction and we kind of changed our direction at the last minute or in this last year. I agree with Scott a lot that Ryan is kind of a problem with regards to attention to detail. I think the other problem is I think he's married to like the ground and pound idea and having a really great running game with a team control quarterback.
Agreed.
And for me, I'm convinced like that's not how you win. And if Tyrod, I think you've got to let Tyrod Taylor try and be a quarterback that wins football games. And if you don't think he can do it, then he's not going to win. But that's the only chance you have. I don't think you can win this other way. I don't think the way that he wants to win, you can win. So for me, if he's willing to change that, if he's willing to go get a offensive coordinator that plays football with a passing offense, then I don't mind, because I do think that I'm kind of with Corey Graham, who said, look, Rex Ryan, while Scott's right, had losing records, certainly has proved himself on defense over the years, that he's had a lot of really good defenses. And I think a year in transition with a guy like Mario Williams, who doesn't really fit the system or doesn't want to fit the system maybe, is out the door maybe, and you get more Rex Ryan type guys in, I have faith that I think that this year defensively for Rex Ryan is the outlier, not the constant. So if I were to argue that the other way, I could say that's the reason to keep Ryan, because there's a certain sense of continuity, and in all likelihood Greg Roman's out the door, and maybe they wanted to build, say, ground and pound because they didn't know that they had a quarterback. And the hope would be now you do have a quarterback, and maybe you can hope that Ryan will fix the defense, and the offense will start to take care of itself if you build that up a little bit more. And in which case, you could get rid of Doug Whaley. I have less of a problem with Doug Whaley than Scott does, though. This, we're kind of funny, because we're sort of like I like, Whaley better than Scott does, but I'm thinking that he might be less necessary in the sense that if we're building a Rex Ryan team and we're going to go that way, then you don't need this guy who really seems to have, at a few times, possibly interjected himself with the E.J. Manuel stuff. That, like, that whole thing in Jacksonville where he maybe win his job back, all of a sudden that was a story in London, and it shouldn't be, and the only person that it benefited would be Whaley. Like, I don't know. Like, there's a couple of things that have struck me poor. Even though I think he kind of did some good stuff with trades this year, I think getting LeSean McCoy was fine. I think that, frankly, the Matt Castle thing, every reporter who questioned that Matt Castle trade should have to wear a sign for five, weeks that says, I'll never start a stupid controversy like that again, because he's awful. He's really awful. And
how
I think
awful
the team
is he? Oh, sorry.
He's so awful he threw an interception on an intentional grounding. So, you know, I think the case is that the philosophical direction is probably comes more from the coach, and you need a year or two with Ryan just to, like, not blow up what little else there is. Because if you do get rid of the coach, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. It's a very good question because if you get rid of the coach and get a new coach, that's easier in some ways than getting rid of the GM, and then the GM says, you know, now the new GM doesn't like the coach. I don't know.
I'd say even if it's not a great – even if it's if more a provocative question than anything this year, I think there is a very real chance that next year, if this team does not go to the playoffs, that we will absolutely be having this discussion if they're both on it. So I'm going to skip out real quick, and I will see if I can come back.
Okay. Your turn, Paul.
All right. So I am going to go and bring up that – you know, I'll you know what, I'll give the answer first, and I'll work my way back. I've only had 10 minutes to think about this while you guys are talking. So I'm glad I'm finally.
It's a tough question.
Yeah, finally devoting that time now. I think I'm going to say I would rather get rid of Whaley, and I don't think there's necessarily a. And I agree with what everyone said. I don't think either is the right choice at this point in time. This year has been a disappointment, which we look at in the lens of Bills fans who have had this year after year after year and have lost total patience with it, because every time we've kept patience and thought, okay, we need some time to develop continuity, this and that, it hasn't mattered. Every season has ended the same, whether we've kept a coach for 2 years or four plus years. So, you know, that colors our viewpoint on this a little bit. Let's take a look at the good and the bad of Doug Whaley and why I would think he is more expendable. The good is some of the talent that's come under him. He has made the Tyrod trade. He has signed some good players to longer-term deals. He has he drafted Stephon Gilmore, correct? Yeah, he drafted Gilmore. He's drafted Darby. He's drafted Carlos. He drafted Sammy. Whatever you think about the trade, Sammy is at least a talented player. He traded for LeSean McCoy in a trade that after one season, which, of course, you cannot tell after one season, goes in Buffalo's advantage. So he has made all those good moves. At the same time, you know, that it was Rex who liked Tyrod. It was, you know, it was a lot of picks that Whaley had when he got here that are stars that have made this team emerge, including Marcel Darius, who was picked under Buddy Nix, Kyle Williams, who was picked under probably the Levy Giron era. It was that long ago. So you have, you know, a lot of those guys came from, you know, not Whaley. Jerry Hughes was a trade that I believe was made by Buddy Nix as well. So we can't just look and say, well, you know, Whaley's made all these amazing moves. He has, but he's made some bad moves that go along with it. The Mario, you know, let's not get a Mario because that wasn't his signing. Let's talk about whether, you know, Charles Clay, good tight end, you're signing handicaps the team next year. You've signed Darius to a longer-term deal. You've extended Kyle Williams a year for more money, which hurts the cap. He's a good player, but he's getting to that point in his career. It's like, he alienated the locker room with the handling of the Fred Jackson situation. Even though I don't think it was a bad idea for the team to unload him, that could have been handled better. Yeah. Whereas Ryan is coming off, you know, a crappy season where he did not have locker room buy-in. So, you know, that's kind of a shot at him too. But what he is a guy who will stand up for his players and a guy who we've seen early on in his coaching career can at least motivate them. I would rather have the guy, if there's a player, if there's someone to get rid of, it's not the guy all the players are seeing every day. I would rather them still have the continuity of seeing Rex every day, having another chance to learn under a guy who has proven that he can win in the NFL, even though he has not proved that consistently in recent years, than I would a guy like Whaley, who's had a chance in Buffalo and who's done some good stuff, but has also done some bad stuff. So my opinion is I would rather get rid of Whaley. That said, I would like to keep them both going into next year and see if, in fact, this was just a bad season. They will figure out the things that went wrong, make some adjustments in the offseason, and turn this ship around. So we would turn to Scott for his answer, but Scott is, unfortunately, he has already given his answer, and he's kind of he's attending to other duties right now. So with that in mind, I say we move on to listener questions, unless we have any more on this.
No, I think that's good. I mean, there was some of the player stuff, too. I mean,
Yes, let's get into the player stuff. Let's talk about We'll go to, you know, Mario in his comments, you know, about how you can't just be running players on off the field at the snap. That is 100% accurate. You go to the comments by Corey Graham, essentially saying to Mario, like, you know your role, do your job, don't worry about what you're doing, just you know, comply. And then you have Preston Brown, who says, well, we honestly could have been running different plays. You have Sammy Watkins, who essentially spoke truth in saying that, you know, players have to do their jobs or they're going to be cut. You can't pin that on the coaches. So, I don't know, were there any particular messages from those players or others? Those are the comments that come to mind that resonate with you, Frank.
It's weird because I was saying to Scott, like, I'm in a way, I agree with all the players and all their comments. Like, I might think it might not be a great place to say some of the things that were said, but I'm with Mario Williams. Like, his role was changed in a way that, like, you know, was not necessarily unfair to him, but he came into one system and now it's a different system and they're asking him to do things he's never done before. And the idea that, like, would he take a pay cut to stay with the team, like, why would you do that for a team that doesn't have a good defense, right? Like, right. He doesn't feel wanted there. He doesn't really fit there. And it makes sense for him to say, like, you know, like, why would I do that? And it's one thing if, because he has a frustration with the overall system. It's completely right for Corey Graham to say, hey, like, he's a good coach. Like, I don't know why everybody's not buying in. It's completely right for Sammy to say, some people need to be taken to task. And it's completely right for Eric Wood to say, you know, this isn't going to work unless we're all in it together. I think ultimately, like, the writing is on the wall for Mario. I think he costs too much money, and I think he didn't fit the system. And he's not going to want to renegotiate, so they're going to let him go. They're going to cut him, and they're going to save, you know, $17 million between him and Leotis McKelvin. It's not a shock that there's going to be changes to the team because they're going to go at best 8-8 now and not make the playoffs. And even good teams have turnover, so bad teams definitely have turnover every year. So for me, this is all right. It's all correct. It's a little disappointing that we're hearing about it, but you know what? It's a frustrating situation for them too. So I'm just sort of like, yep, everybody seems in the right here.
Yep, I would. You know, I don't disagree there. In fact, I pretty much agree. Even with the stuff Mario says, Mario has valid points. Do they end up eliminating him next year? I'd say yes. I think he's a better player than we saw this year. I think he is, you know, he can succeed in the Pettin system, which we saw. He can succeed in Wade Phillips' system, which was before when he was in Houston. He can succeed in the system that was laid out for him by Jim Schwartz. So he's got talent. The concern for me is he's on the wrong side of the wrong side of 30, and he is at the back end of a very large contract, which if we look into the 2016 season, which of course I would have, had I had this pulled up earlier, I could have made this determination, but you're looking at the fact that, you know, you're due to spend a lot of money for this guy in 2016. I'm going to the contracted players right now. So yeah, we're looking at someone who is due $19.9 million cap number next year. You save $12.9 million by cutting him, you eat $7 million. This was the first year where it's really feasible to part ways with him. If you can trade him, we're gonna refresh on this scenario. It's exactly the same. So, you know, with that in mind, I think they likely move on from Mario. It will just be easier because of his age and his level of dissatisfaction at present. I think there are some other, you know, big name players I wouldn't be surprised that get, you know, put off. And looking at where the cap savings are, you know, going down the list, Leotis certainly is the one that comes most to mind. Even Corey Graham, who's a good leader, we like the way he talks. His performance has noticeably slipped this year, so we shouldn't assume that he'll be on the roster. Manny Lawson's name gets brought up every year. He seems to be a good fit in the Ryan scheme, but again, maybe they part ways with him. So the Bills are going to.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure we've seen the Ryan scheme in its total yet. I think that he really tried to work with what he had because he knew there was good players, and I think Ryan probably has a lot of guys in mind that make sense for his scheme. So, you know.
Yep, I would agree. So, you know, we'll find out what the Bills end up doing this offseason. We won't get into too much detail about that. This Discord is not surprising. The Bills made some roster changes today to essentially see what some new blood is going to do. I don't think we should analyze those moves as much as let's talk if any of them make some sort of an impact come Sunday. And overall, we can expect some more of this talking, especially once the season ends, and figure out, okay, where is this organization going? There's a lot of money invested in these players next year as well. The expectations, let's face it, if they lose out, go 6-10, get rid of some people, they're still going to have expectations placed on them by this city next year based on the level of talent that they have. So this should be really an interesting season going forward, interesting offseason going forward. So, all right, with that in mind, I say we now we move on to listener questions. So we go to Brian Punt first. You know, would you keep Gillislee based on his limited touches? Steven agreed that, you know, he shows enough, if not around, to keep, at least shop around. Let's keep in mind, you know, he's had, I think the key part of Brian's question is based on his limited touches. It's almost too early to say. Even his 60-plus yard touchdown, that was great setup and great blocking. As bad as I thought Roman did on Sunday with his calls, and as bad as the offensive line did, that was a beautifully called, perfectly blocked play where Frank and I could have gained substantial yards. Scott, maybe not as much. He's not here to defend himself, so let's not include him in that mix. But I would definitely say, too soon to tell with Gillislee, but he at least gets a shot in the offseason next year. Who gets fired? Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the other good thing for him is he's incredibly cheap. So he doesn't have a big contract or anything. You can bring him in. And it doesn't cost anything to do that. So yes.
Exactly. Gillislee, for those of you wondering, is making $510,000, which is a nice haul for for us. But for him, that's just who cares sort of deal. So they can tender him, hopefully keep him aboard if he ends up showing that what he did on Sunday is can be something regular for him. James asks, who gets fired first? We talked about our opinions on Whaley and Ryan. We gave our thoughts there. I'll jump in and answer first, and then I'll let you come in, Frank. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Dennis Thurman, because he took a talented defense. Rex needs to kind of scapegoat someone and say, hey, this didn't work out. The players didn't apply our schemes, and I'm going to go with him.
Yeah, I think there's always turnover. I think Thurman and the offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, will be gone, but not for the same reason. I think he'll probably get a job somewhere else. The other thing I would say is if we're talking about Ryan and Whaley, like specifically, I'm kind of with you, Paul, in that, or Scott was saying, well, if they have another bad year, we'll be talking about this again with these two. And I think that if they have another bad year, the two of them are going to go together. I think that the Pegulas will want a clean house like they do with the Sabres. And that's exactly what they'll do.
All right, this one will be yours first, Frank, from Steven. I haven't lived in Western New York for 30 years. Should I just give up on the Bills and find a new team?
Yes.
All right, I'd agree. I would love to agree, but it's in my blood. There's nothing I can do about it.
But if it wasn't in my blood, then you should. If you can and you want to root for another team, you should.
Right.
You'll never feel good about it. Steven, you won't. You'll always know that you were a Bills fan. But if you want to give it a try, go for it.
Yep. Again, it's one of those things where I would say it's no more likely to say it. No, I'm sick of being white. I want to be Hispanic. I can't actually do that. So that's
no. And you'd get in a lot of trouble if you tried.
Yep.
There would be a lot of people that had a problem with that.
And don't get me wrong, there would be some grieving, some heartbreak. All breakups are tough, but you might be better off in the long run. So think about that. We'd miss you as a listener, so maybe stick
with that. Well, you could still listen to us.
That's true, yeah. He can laugh at us because he'll be a Patriots fan.
Right, they're like stupid Bills fans.
Yep. All right, this one will be for you too, Frank. How did the Bills' defense fall in the span of a single offseason from dominant to inept, despite being essentially unchanged? Injuries, aging out, the addition of Darby, the loss of Searcy, what other factors might be in play?
Yes. The other factor, and I would encourage you to go to Pro Football Focus, Football Outsiders, and read about defense. They are they're advanced metrics people, and they've more or less conclusively shown, as far as I'm concerned, that defenses are the most volatile part of a team. They are the hardest part to have. They're the hardest thing to keep together for any sustained period of time. Basically, if you have a good quarterback, you'll have a good offense, and that's true for as long as you have a good quarterback. And a good defense is basically has a shelf life. And that's in part because offenses are more important and offenses dictate things. So some of it is there was writing on the wall because we're talking about defense, and that was it was just going to happen. The other thing is I think we touched on it a bit more, like, it's a transition year. You're trying to take good pieces and fit them into a slightly different hole. I think that you look at the Jim Schwartz defense that got a lot of sacks and did a lot of things right, but didn't win a lot of football games either. So, you know, for me, like, that just happens, right? And then, of course, injuries. Like, the linebacker core got depleted. The corners got hurt. I think losing Aaron Williams is a huge deal because Aaron Williams was definitely the guy who sort of knew the whole offense and was in charge of making sure it was all being played right. I would say that it's a little bit of everything. I just, you know, wouldn't really panic the way that some people are because I think that it can just happen.
Yep, I'd agree there's still talent there. I think Schwartz did a better job of realizing, ooh, this is the talent I have. I am not going to mess with this, do these simple things. You know, let's go and take these games. They were much more lucky with injuries last year. They did not lose any of their star players to significant time. They did this year. They didn't have, you know, Searcy was a good player, not a great player. I don't think that has a huge impact, but there is definitely a lack of depth behind him, which we started to see with Bakari Rambo, who is up and down, and we saw what his down weeks look like this week. We saw Duke Williams, who's had flashes, but mainly I think this is going to be it for his career with the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the linebacking core ended up being you post a photo of a dumpster fire. I think that ended up being the biggest surprise is how bad these linebackers were. Maybe we didn't win the Kiko Alonso trade, not because we didn't get a great runner in LeSean McCoy, but because we lost the Buffalo Bills here, lost a linebacker who was, you know, a guy who could hold the team together. They did so well last year, we assumed they were fine with you know, Bradham struggled and then was hurt, and then the team really struggled, and Preston Brown has been nothing remotely special this season. So, you know, that's kind of my take. I think they, you know, they will talk more in the offseason about ways they could improve because, let's face it, there is still talent on that defense, and they just need to figure out how to use it. All right, I guess this one will be mine to answer first.
Let me read the question for you then. Because, you know, you've been reading a lot of the questions. Rex has 4 years left of a multi-million-dollar contract. Because of this, he won't be fired. This is not the same as he shouldn't be fired. Explain the sunk cost fallacy and how it applies here.
Yes.
And I said I would explain the sunk cost fallacy where that.
Yeah, I think you should. You should go ahead and do that just because I don't feel like
Googling. A lot of people, and it comes up in a lot of relationships where people are like, well, I've got 3 years in with so-and-so, and so I should really stick it out and see if things will get better. When really those 3 years are gone, and if things are not good, you should let it go. And so the same thing, Rex Ryan is owed his money, and if he is going to be a bad coach and hurt you over the next few years, it's better to just part ways now because you've lost that money anyway. I think that part, and that's a good thing. I think that the requirement, however, is to finish the thought off, is you do need to be able to actually be better off without him. And I don't know that's the case because, unfortunately, unlike a relationship where you could just, you know, move, that actually, that, you know, you can't, there's a cap. Well, not a cap for that, but I guess the Pegulas have tons of money. But you do actually have to pay another coach to come in and then do that as well. So if you have another coach that you think is really going to make the difference, I don't think it is. I think it has almost entirely boiled down to, you know, quarterback, and he might have one now. Then, yeah, go get that coach. But, frankly, like, I don't know that applies here because I don't know that he should be fired. And I don't know that he wouldn't be if he had done worse.
Yeah, I would agree, too. I don't think I don't think we can fully assess as fans whether the Rex Ryan experiment is a failure based on one season. No more than we could establish whether Doug Marrone was a failure based on two seasons or an overwhelming success, depending on how you want to look at it.
Right.
You know, the bottom line is we kind of need more time to assess that, to decide that. I think the Bills would be wise to stick with him and see what exactly they have because he has that unique history of extremely good success and extremely disappointing failure. There's not a lot of in-between with Rex Ryan's teams. They seem to really overwhelmingly exceed expectations or totally tank it. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, we know he won't be fired. I don't think – I agree with Frank. I don't think he should be fired either. We'll get into Steven's next question here. I don't like Whaley as a GM. He missed badly on Manuel. He paid more for Watkins than he was worth or than the Bills could afford. He missed on most offensive linemen, save Glenn. That is something I forgot to mention, which we showed his boy, did he whiff on the offensive line, and that's really cost this team. You know, he did well with Glenn. He did well with Incognito. He has more misses than hits. So this we kind of covered, I would say, during our Whaley or Ryan, who's going to be fired thing, so I don't think we need to necessarily get into that. Are we looking to 2016 mock drafts? Well, I'm not, Frank. I have a feeling Scott is.
Yeah. I think Scott's looked at one, but I haven't. Because I know that we're going to pick somewhere between probably 12th and 20th, and who cares?
Yep. See how...
We'll look at it soon enough, and there'll be some lineman or cornerback or linebacker that we want, and we'll end up taking a running back, I'm sure. And it will be incredibly disappointing.
Yep.
Which current Bills will not be on the roster next year? We're going to save that for the offseason, if you don't mind me jumping in. But like, that's a huge question.
It is. I say, how about we give in to Steve a little bit and name at least one player besides Mario Williams we don't think will be on the roster, and then save the rest of it for the off season. And I am going to say Robert Woods.
I'm going to say E.J. Manuel. So there you go.
There we go.
To what extent did injuries play a part in the Bills' success this year, or lack thereof, I suppose?
Yes.
Does this indicate a lack of depth on the team? I don't want to say that there's a lack of depth on the team because I think they went through a lot of cornerbacks and linebackers. I think they went through an abnormal amount. And frankly, like, there wasn't a lot of room to have more players on. Like, they were down to, like, needing to go find people on the street. When you're at the point of needing to go find people on the street, like, you've already gone through a normal amount of depth. So I don't want to say that there was a lack of depth. Lack of depth to me is when you have LeSean McCoy and then you have Boom Heron and that's your running back core. And the drop off is massive. You know, you can only sustain so many injuries. To what extent did they play a part? I think they win the Jacksonville game if Tyrod Taylor is not injured. If they win the Jacksonville game, the back half of the schedule changes dramatically. Like, you're in a different place when you're playing Washington, Philadelphia, Kansas.
Not Dallas, yeah. In Kansas City, Houston, all those teams.
Right, it's a different dynamic. It doesn't change the season entirely. It doesn't mean they wouldn't lose these games, but I think that they'd still be playing for something this week against Washington, and I really, in my mind, think that was a huge deal. I think injuries like hurt them at the beginning of the season with that game in particular, and probably the Giants game that they should have won, in my mind, or could have won. So I think the injuries, you know, people talk about next man up and excuses. Well, at some point it means something because the backup is not as good as the starter. That's why one guy's the starter and the other guy's the backup. And so talent drops off and it gets hard to win football games.
Yep, I would agree. So I look at that question and, you know, I kind of say, you know, the injuries were there. I will disagree with something there. I think there, despite all the injuries, there was a lack of depth in certain areas where they didn't suffer huge injuries. We talked about the quarterback position and how much that hurt. We're seeing it a bit along the defensive front now, but of course you can argue they couldn't afford any depth because they invested all in the starters.
Right.
You know, I think
that might be that's fair. Maybe that's the right place where they overspent on the top level and really needed like a few guys. You know, instead of having a 90 line and a 70 line, they should have had an 85 line and a 75 line.
Right, and remember this, you invested heavily in tight end with Charles Clay, and therefore they were going to design plays around Charles Clay, yet the danger about it is they have no one behind him who could really step into that role when Charles Clay got hurt. So, you know, that is what it is, so I don't want to go too much deeper into that. And then I think we're on to the last question. Do we describe the Bills as being in a rebuilding mode? I would say no. I think they had a bad year, is what I'm going to say.
They had a bad year, and it was a transition year, and it was weird. And And it wasn't like any, it wasn't like a lot of years. It wasn't like the end of the Marone era where, sorry, it wasn't the end of like the Gailey era where like, okay, the Gailey thing is not working. And it wasn't like the, so, you know, that wasn't this year. And it also wasn't, well, now we've got to start all over with a whole bunch of new people. There was a lot of talented people and they added more talented people and they had a good go at it. And I think if they had ended up playing as poorly as the Sabres played, the year that they added a bunch of talent, I think the Pegulas would have cleaned house. Like, if this was a 4 or 5 win team, I think a lot of people would have cleaned house and we would have been starting all over completely. I think that the fact that they're a kind of mediocre team gives everybody another year to sort of say, okay, well, where can we apply plaster instead of rebuilding the wall?
Yep, and the only one thing that could go into the rebuilding thought, too, if Steven ends up being right, which, again, Scott and I don't necessarily think he will, they've already got, you know, you're looking at $4+ million in dead money this year in 2016 before anything comes into play. So they might have to look at cutting some bigger contracts of players who are actually productive and talented at this point and throwing Mario aside, whether he falls into that category or not at this point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that'll be something to think about going forward. So are we ready to jump into happier times on this day in Bills history?
Yeah, you got a happy one for us? Go for it.
I do. We'll go through the depressing. One of the depressing ones I skipped, which was a 2002 game against the Packers, where the Bills officially got knocked out of the playoffs, dropped to 7-8 in a game where if they'd won, and then they ended up winning the next week against Cincinnati in a game I attended, the entire AFC East would have been 9-7, and it would have been hilarious.
Right.
But, they lost 10-0. My memories of that game I won't go into, but I just remember they clearly recovered a fumble that was whistled dead and would have been a touchdown. They got they got the ball deep in Packers territory like the 10 early in the game and then somehow threw an interception. That was ugly. So we won't talk about this game anymore.
I'm so glad we didn't talk about that game.
No, yeah, I'm glad we skipped that entirely and I didn't go into those level of details. There was a good game in December 22nd a couple years ago against the Dolphins. This was not televised locally in Buffalo. Many of our fans might not remember because the Bills were out of the playoffs by that point, but it was a fun game to watch. So we're instead going to go back, way back to 1996 is the year. So it's an uncommon year, so stick with me on this. It was the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs from what was then known as Rich Stadium. Kind of a win-in-their-in situation for both teams going into this game at 9-6. If the Chiefs won, they were in the playoffs. If the Bills won, they were in the playoffs. One team would win, one team would lose. The Bills came
this
into
this is the week that if they had I remember this because if they were talking about if they had tied, they would both get in.
That's crazy. That's a Paul-like memory of the situation.
Yeah, right? And they were like, do you think they would do that? And they said, no, they probably won't do that. Go ahead.
Yep. So we'll go back on this game. Old nemesis Pete Stojanovic had a good day for the Chiefs. The good news for the Bills is he did all of their scoring. So he kicked two field goals in the first half to put the Kansas City Chiefs up 6-0. Christie kicked a field goal late in the second half to make it 6-3. The Bills get the ball in the start of the second half when Bruce Smith had inspired the team by saying, you might not like what I say, but we can't have plays where we turn over the ball. If we don't turn the ball over, we're going to win this game. The Bills immediately fumbled the second half kickoff. So the good news is the defense held up. Chiefs got another field goal, and that was it for the Chiefs scoring. The Bills would get another Christie field goal, and then finally the touchdowns start coming. They had a touchdown in the fourth quarter and a 4-yard pass from Kelly to a tight end, and another pass from Kelly to a wide receiver. The Bills would go on to win this game 20-9. Marty Schottenheimer was disappointed, saying the idea was to work our running game as best we could in an effort to create tempo. I think we did that because the Chiefs had so little faith in their quarterback. They called 28-plus running plays and only 7 passing plays in the first half. It was because the starting quarterback, a guy named Rich Gannon, suffered a hamstring pull last week. I don't even remember Rich Gannon playing for Kansas City.
There you go.
To give you that. Kansas City Chiefs Encyclopedia remembers this game as a year they started 4-0 and the Chiefs didn't make the playoffs.
Yep.
Derek Thomas said, I don't want to go home and see my mama. She'll be telling me it's all right, and it ain't all right. So he had probably the most memorable quote of this game, but this was good news for the Bills. The articles on this game tended to focus on this was the Greybeards. They call it the last hurrah of the Greybeards, which it did end up being because The Bills haven't won a playoff game since this game took place. They would go on to face Jacksonville the next week in the wild card game and lose at home in what was Jim Kelly's last career game. So we're looking at what was Jim Kelly's last regular season game. He had a spectacular, not sorry, he had a good one, 20 of 29, 279 mm-hmm. yards, two touchdowns, a pick. He had one carry for minus 1 yard, which you know is good because it means he was kneeling down to end this game. Steve Tasker had two running plays in this game. That's bizarre. He had four catches for 87 yards. Andre Reed, six catches, 76 yards. Tight end Lonnie Johnson, four catches, 48 yards. Even Thurman got in the act with a catch for 27 yards. So, congratulations to the 1996 Buffalo Bills, who on this day won a game against the Kansas City Chiefs, finished 10-6, and head to the playoffs. I believe the last playoff game that took place at Ralph Wilson Stadium the next year.
Quite possibly. Yep. I just looked at the standings to confirm. Buffalo finished 10-6, and then the Colts, the Jaguars, were 9-7 and got in, and Kansas City was 9-7 and didn't get in. So they would have been both 9-6-1 if they had agreed to tie, and that would have effectively frozen out either Indianapolis or Jacksonville. And more importantly, weirdly, Buffalo wouldn't have played probably Jacksonville. They probably would have had a rematch against the Chiefs in Buffalo. And so it would have been, you know, looking back and seeing that they lost by a field goal to Jacksonville, I wonder if they would take their chances and sign a devil's deal with Kansas City to, like, have a tie.
Yeah, that'd be tough to get away with, but it would be interesting.
It would be.
All right, so we don't have Scott for his usual clever trivia answers, and you might have noticed, oh, he is back. I've heard.
Oh,
he's back for his grand entrance to a trivia answer. I was going to keep this one very open-ended, and you know, you noticed I talked about a touchdown pass to a Bills tight end in the fourth quarter that gave the Bills lead for the first time, the touchdown pass to the wide receiver that put them over the top, and also mentioned that Kansas City had so little faith in this quarterback who was backing up Rich Gannon that they rushed it 39 times for only 119 yards, mind you, so not like that a great day, rather than throw the ball any more than they had to. So, name any of these guys. The Bills tight end who caught the go-ahead touchdown, the Bills wide receiver who caught the clinching touchdown, or the Chiefs quarterback so bad that they decided to rush the ball an absolute ton even though it wasn't successful.
Okay. I'll say the wide receiver was Eric Molds because I think in 1996 he was brand new and on the Bills. I might be wrong, but I think that he came in at the end of the Kelly regime.
Without answering that, I will say Eric Molds was on the Buffalo Bills in 1996. It was his rookie season.
Okay.
He fumbled the kickoff at the beginning of the third quarter.
I'll say Jay Riemersma was Riemersma was 2000. I'll say it was still Pete Metzelaars. I doubt it is Pete Metzelaars, but I'll say it was Pete Metzelaars for the tight end. And for the Chiefs quarterback, I'll say it was Scott Appleton.
I don't know that name, but you know, I'll have to
one of the long and studious histories of Scott Appleton's, who was an NFL quarterback. One of my namesakes, one of my many namesakes. So for the tight end, we'll just go real quick. The tight end for the Bills was Jack Conklin, otherwise known as, you know, currently he plays tackle for Michigan State and is a highly regarded draft pick in next year's draft in terms of offensive line talent, someone who might be available when the Bills are picking if they want someone who much earlier in their careers was a tight end for the Chiefs, probably around the age of, tight end for the Bills earlier on. I think he comes back. I think the Bills would have rights to him if he came back. And re-entered the draft.
Right, I'll go one at a time through these so I don't forget the guys you mentioned. Jack Conklin, sure. As you know, to play in the Big Ten, had to forge his paperwork to not include his real name because he is much older now. So back when he was playing for the Bills, he was known as Tony Klein.
Oh, yeah, well, sure, he went by Tony Klein, right, yes. Exactly. Okay, and then in terms of the wide receiver for the Bills...
go ahead.
Yeah, no, and well, the secret's kind of out at this point because it was Toyotomi Hideyoshi, who was one of the earliest and most famous Japanese samurai, from the village of Enkei. He was a great politician of the Sengoku period, and is regarded as Japan's second great unifier. He also did catch that touchdown that day. It's really a man of many talents, what can you say?
Right, because he was often so, you know, he would never show up late for anything. They nicknamed him Early, and then his friends called him Quinn. So occasionally it just stuck. Quinn Early was the name that they
kind of stuck. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, well over 600 years old by the time that game was played. So good for him.
Not surprisingly, his last season in the NFL being over 600 years old. So
exactly. But you know, he retired, and he did consider a comeback with the Bills. In fact, they did scout him out at offensive line this week, but they decided to go with what they had, and clearly that was a poor choice. And then the Chiefs quarterback, of course, was Marisol Gomez de Santos. He's also a Brazilian long distance runner, but you know, currently at that point, he was also the backup quarterback for the Chiefs, thrust into action that day, and did not get it done to them, and that's why they ran him out of town, as it was.
Oh, wow. That was very, very clever. I don't even know if I want to give like the actual answer on that one now.
That was the actual answer.
Oh, okay, that's right.
You forget. Was Marisol Gomez de Santos.
I'm looking at the wrong sheet then. It's telling me the answer is a guy named Steve Bono.
Steve Bono.
Yeah. It is Steve Bono because, God, 1996 Frank definitely knew the name Steve Bono because I was in high school.
Bono.
He used to back up Montana and Young, and they were saying, oh, he's just as good as them, based on him having one really good game when they were both hurt, when he played spectacularly well. But that's another story altogether. So that's this day in Bills history, December 22nd, 1996. Unlike this year, where the Bills clinched no playoff berth, the Bills clinched the playoffs that day and would play in what is now Ralph Wilson Stadium the next day. We're winding down, and what is really, you know, we've got one topic left, and that's the upcoming game.
And my battery's almost dead on my laptop.
All right, so I'm going to move this along and just say, you know, what? This is so tough for me because, in one hand, you have a Chiefs team or a Cowboys team being led by Kellen Moore at quarterback. They've been terrible all year. They're 4-10. Can't get out of their own way without Tony Romo. And yet, on the other hand, this seems exactly the Bills could lose this game because that's what they could do is lose to Kellen Moore at home against a completely depleted Cowboys offense. So knowing that the laptop battery is dead for Frank, I will start with him just in case it dies immediately. He can get his answers in.
The Bills are going to win this game, but let's be clear. They definitely could lose this game. The Bills are going to win this game because I think the Cowboys are actually that awful. And I think the other thing that happened is everybody sort of let the air out of the room this week. Everybody's probably feeling a little bit embarrassed about everything, and I think last week it was the quit week, and this week is the all right. We gotta pull
We're
ourselves
all professionals.
Together. Right, like this is the pull it together week, right? And so I think they are gonna pull it together. I think that I don't think there's a fundamental terrible flaw with the character of the Buffalo Bills. I think that there is a disappointed team. I think there was an injured team, and I think this week they're gonna kind of pull it together. And frankly, The Cowboys are terrible. They have one wide receiver. They have Kellen Moore, and they have some defense. And I think at home the Bills are going to win this one. I think they're going to win it kind of handily. I think they're finally going to have a good game because they're probably going to let down against the Jets the following week. I think I'm betting on 7-9 here. And so I'm going to say they win 24-10. I think they're going to kind of put some points on the board. I think they're going to beat some people. And I think that's what's going to happen. So there you go.
Okay. I will also be picking the Bills. Frank had some very real reasons why the Bills might win. Mine is strictly based off of karma and what we know from this Bills team just in general and how it treats its fans, in that if we lost our last two games, that would almost certainly improve our draft position, maybe even get us on bordering a top 10 pick. Instead, the Bills are going to stay right where they are in the latter part of the first round, and for that to happen, they're going to need to go ahead and win this game and do nothing other than hurt their own draft position. So that's why they'll win, and therefore the score doesn't really matter, but because the Cowboys will be starting the pride of Boise State, Kellen Moore, I will go ahead and give him 6 points and the Bills 14.
All right.
Buffalo.
I think, yeah, logic totally dictates the Bills win this game. But the Bills totally defy logic. So based on that, I'm actually going to say the Cowboys win this one in one of the ugliest games you'll ever see, 7-6 at Ralph Wilson Stadium. And again, this isn't an emotional overreaction, sort of like I hate the Bills, I'm picking against them. This is like, I think the Bills can totally somehow lose to Kellen Moore at home, like they've lost to Derek Anderson at home. Not even good times, Derek Anderson. So, you
That's
know.
True. Yeah. I didn't know he was on Good Times.
Yeah, yeah. Good Times, Derek. Yeah, it was going way back. So, do we have any other comments we want to make on this game or on this podcast in general, or is it time to cut and run?
Did you know that in Turkmenistan, it is now illegal to change the name of a purebred horse during its lifetime?
Well, I'm just about to be arrested in Turkmenistan. That's what I got to say to that.
Son of a bitch.
All right. So with that in mind, you know, you can reach us on Facebook, bbillsmny, facebook.com/bbillsmny, Twitter.com, bbillsmny. We'll be live tweeting with you guys as always during the game. You can find us on iTunes. You can Google Buffalo Bills Podcast, where if you happen to be in my location with my IP address, you have the John Murphy Show, you have Bills and Beers, you have Sal Speak, and then the Buffalo News Podcast, and then there we are on page one, Buffalo Bills maybe next year. So it has been a pleasure it's been a pleasure for you allowing us to vent to you. It's been a pleasure for us for allowing us to vent to you. So we will be back next week for the penultimate podcast. Boy, I flubbed this exit. So I'm just going to say screw it. Have a good night, everyone. I am Paul.
I'm Scott.
I'm Frank.
And on that note, we will see you next week.
Goodbye.